Okay, let's wrap it up here with this final, I'm going to call it about a 15-minute little session, and then we're going to kind of close out. But I do have an announcement that's really exciting. I just started a scholarship program today for anyone who has student loans out still. It's a $100 scholarship. And in order to apply, all you have to do is go get my car in the rain and bring it right up to this door. Just kidding. Steve, thank you. I liked how you pulled that together. And while you were talking, a gentle whisper, I call the Holy Spirit, said, remember Matthew 9:37. Recall that verse. The harvest is plentiful. What? Finish it for me. The laborers, the workers are few. We've talked about work. We've talked about ministry. We've talked about the role of teams. And I think we can all agree teams are really important. I started with a kind of a joking, funny little story about being a 14-year-old boy working at Dairy Queen, but I really did learn about teams and the role of teams. I learned how to work with others working at Dairy Queen. And that laid the foundation throughout the rest of my life of why it really matters. And even more so as believers in a lost and broken world. We're living in a very broken world, right? I mean, we've talked about identity crises. The cultural narrative is that you can be anything you want to be. I mean, I don't even want to get into it. Some of the stuff, it's like 30 years ago, we wouldn't even have thought that was possible to have some conversation. But today, we've talked about identity. We've talked about teams. And the role of teams really matters. And one of the things that I would say as we think about the harvest being plentiful, I use the word the marketplace. Wherever you go, I don't see a sharp divide between the work I do, whether that's in dentistry or coaching or helping people, and ministry, okay? Let's kind of move away from this idea of when someone says, well, are you in full-time Christian service? I think we're all in full-time Christian service. Whether you're work on Wall Street or Dairy Queen, I think we're all in full-time Christian service. And so if that's true, if the worship we do on Sunday morning is so important to us, let's begin to see not work as worship, but everywhere we go, as we go, we're worshiping God on Monday morning in the workplace. So the harvest is plentiful. The marketplace is plentiful with people who are hungry. They're worn out. They're anxious. They're distracted. They're tired. They have nowhere to turn. Let's remember who we are, and that place, that space called the workplace, can be a wonderful place to build relationships. And so since the harvest is plentiful and you guys, we've decided today, we're all going to be workers in God's kingdom, what would be a skill that we could really see as a way to penetrate moving the gospel to our natural places of work and in the neighborhood? And I contend that the number one thing for me has been friendship, okay? So why is friendship so important? I believe that, you know, the way the gospel was shared to me 30 years ago, I'm not sure that would have been a good approach for me in the world we live today. Now, the gospel's still the same gospel, but I think people have changed, and we should probably develop a relationship with people. And so I'm promoting the fact that we get to know people. And as a fruitful leader in the marketplace, leadership begins with listening. And we need to become really, really good listeners. And we don't need to tell people. So when we share the gospel, it's not about, I need to get them to do something. I've given up on trying to get people to do something or get them to become something. I'm not trying to convert people. I'm trying to invite them into a story. And that's God's own story. The gospel is God's own story from Genesis to Revelation. His story of not only his own death and his burial and his resurrection, but it's also his ascension and his reign and his rule over everything in the heavens and earth. And we are anxiously awaiting his adoption, the sonship. We talked about being sons of God, about being children of God. And so the gospel is something in which we are anxiously awaiting that lamb to come again and usher his people, the church, into new creation, where he will then usher us into a whole new city. Not only a city, but we'll have a new body. We'll have a new heavens and a new earth. So let's not forget the rest of the story. Let's remember there's a really great story. And the gospel is really good news. The gospel is not just, man, you are a mess. You're drinking too much. You're addicted. You're broken. Your marriage is suffering. You're a mess. That's not good news. What's good news? The good news of the gospel is that Christ, he made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him you might become the righteousness of God. And you know what? He's anxious to become in relationship with you. So what I would say when we think about the Great Commission, we all, one of the things on my five principles of a fruitful leader, number five is you are a commissioned worker. The harvest is plentiful, the workers are few, and you are commissioned. And your commission is to, let me start before the even the go part. All authority has been handed over to me. We often leave that part out of the Great Commission. All authority has been handed over to me. Go. And what Dallas Willard taught me was it's not just go, it's as you go. As you go. As you go to work, as you go to the ball fields with your kids, as you go to the movies with your friends, as you go, make disciples, make learners, apprentices of God's kingdom. So I just wanted to point out that as we go, let's become friends with people. Let's listen. Let's elevate the role of listening. Let's get to know them. And once we get to know them, let's invite them. So one of the things I learned from Dallas Willard is that he said, as we go, make disciples of all kinds of people. Plumbers, electricians, teachers, all nations, not just Sedgwick County people, not just Kansans. What about people all over the world? But it starts right here in Sedgwick County and in the city. And so as we go, and then what we do is we're inviting people into the fellowship of the Trinity. So it's really important to say that when God said, all authority has been handed over to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples. He's saying, it's on my back. Let me do it. It's on my shoulders. I'll help you. I'll be there. And oh, by the way, lo, I'm with you always. I'm with you. Remember we talked about being with God as apprentices, every square inch of the marketplace of where we work and where we play. Everything in the heavens and earth is his, and this is his kingdom. So what I'm promoting, number one, is leadership begins with listening. Number two, let's invite people into God's own story, the gospel, the really good news, not the bad news that we're all broken and we're going to go to hell if we don't change our ways. That's not good news. The good news is he's going to all who receive him, to those who believe in his name, he gives the right to become children of God. And if we just place our confidence and trust in Jesus, he will come in and he will eat with you and he will nourish you and you will grow. And oh, by the way, come and follow me and what? I will make you fishers of people, right? I will do that. So I wanted to remind us that it's on God's back. This is his mission in the world. And he's inviting us as co-laborers into the commissioned work of being a disciple maker, and friendship is the way. And so what we're wanting to do is not only invite them into the story, then we want to empower them, we want to equip them, we want to teach them what Jesus said to do. Not just come to church with me, although that's a good place to go. Let's empower them by getting to know them, get into their life, find out what their struggles are, find out if they need help, and say, I'm just here. I just want to walk with you. That's the movement of the disciple, is I'm just going to walk with you through life's journey. And then finally, we live in a very discouraging world. There are a lot of distractions, and there's a lot of discouragement. I can't even watch TV anymore. I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm not saying I'm not a legalist guy. You can watch all the Netflix stories you want, but I don't want to watch it because it fills me with so much discouragement. And yet, we are people that are meant to encourage, to pour courage into people, because we live in a world where people don't have much hope. Somebody said it in my small group, you know, around the table. We're living in a world where there's not a lot of hope. And so let's encourage and support. So the way we do that is with friends. Become their friend first. Listen, invite them. So one of the things that's happened, I've been meeting with a guy who lost his job. He's about to lose his marriage. He just came out of rehab, and he was a very high net worth individual. He thought he was on top of the world, and he's about to lose everything. Well, when everything was riding high, he had a lot of friends. Now that things are riding pretty low, he didn't have as many friends as he thought he had. He had the friends when he could get them stuff or take them or give them money. But now he's finding, I've lost almost everything, and now nobody's around. I've been meeting with this guy regularly, and he's not a believer. He's gone to church. He's not quite sure he wants to even talk about spiritual things. He's kind of bitter about church. But I'm just hanging there. I'm just hanging with him. I'm just being his friend. And Richard and I, part of our team, is we've been praying for this individual, that he would open his heart to hear the gospel and to be invited into God's own story. But what's interesting is I've been praying about, well, what's a way that I can take this off of me? I'm not going to get him to become a converted Christian. But what's a way that maybe he could come in and step into God's own story? And so when I got back from Israel, he said, hey, how was your trip? Oh, man, I learned so much. He goes, well, what'd you do? And I said, well, we toured the Holy Land. Really? Well, tell me about that. He goes, you have some pictures? So I ran over to my iMac, pulled up I have this whole video collage of my trip to Israel. I was like, this is where Jesus healed the paralytic. We were in the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus then went to, and it was like a wonderful way to go, this isn't my story, man. This is God's own story. And it just got him in there. He's like, wow, that stuff really happened, didn't it? I go, yeah, it really happened. And I stood in the Mount of Olives, the Garden of Gethsemane, where else did we go, Richard? We lived.
Petra.
We did go to Petra, one of the seven wonders of the world. But all that to say, what was so comforting to me is I'm his friend first, and then I invited him to take a look at who God is, gently, softly, not in his face. And it's going to take a lot of time. And I think Steve alluded to that. It takes time. We can't, in the world we live in today, we can't barrel people over. We can't dump the dump truck and say, man, you got to make this decision right now. We need to spend time with people. We need to develop them and give them opportunity to see who Christ is. So that's my perspective on friendship. I tell you what, we've been here a long time, and I feel like I've dumped the dump truck today. So forgive me for that, but I'm tired, and I'm sure you guys are. How would you like to go about, do we want to have a discussion on the skill of friendship or kind of open it up? Any thoughts as we're starting to conclude today? Yeah.
What have you found successful? What has worked for you?
Perfect.
What have your prayers been for them? How have you answered those prayers? What's been the experience of people in that area? I'd like to hear.
I'd love to hear how you've seen friendship and you've opened the door to just getting to know people as a path for sharing Christ and the gospel. Any examples of that in your life?
I was going to say, this reminds me very much of, we lived in Japan for 5 years doing ministry, and this like our exact strategy in Japan. And it's just so interesting that probably culturally America has become the same type of mission field, if you will. And we saw a lot of fruit, actually, just finding people that wanted to be friends, developing a friendship with them, but then being just honest about who we are, and providing them opportunity to have a point of connection with our team or community of believers, which wasn't really even, there was a church, but it wasn't primarily that. And I just saw a lot of fruit from people, you know, developing relationships and becoming interested. And, you know, what makes us tick, what makes us operate. And then off that, in Japan especially, it's a place of discouragement before COVID, before high suicide rates. But I think post-COVID we're seeing with young people today is isolation, discouragement, depression. And like, what an opportunity we have to bring life, hope, and encouragement. And it starts with that same friendship.
So Rob, did it take a time for them to trust you after a while? I mean, tell me about authenticity and the trust. Were they able to gauge that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And it's not like we come in front of someone and 2 months later you share the gospel story with them in its entirety. It would take at least a year to develop that trust with someone. And I think one thing that you, as a missionary, you're taught to be a good missionary, that the navigators emphasizes, is you want to become a learner of culture and a learner of the people. And so when you can be taken on the learner mindset of a friend, which is the first one, listening, you know, that listening probably also includes you're asking questions to learn about them.
Yeah.
And kind of to bring this to here, I have a 10-year-old daughter who really wants to tell people about Jesus, and she was at a YMCA camp this week. And she, you know, meets someone, and then she just wants to say, "Are you a Christian?" And then they'll usually say something. And then she wants to just tell them, like, "Well, what do you know about God?" And so I have to remind her that, and I told her this just 2 days ago, you know, why don't you start with asking them questions about their family, what it means to them if they think they're a Christian. And just ask them and let them talk. And when they want to hear from you, they're going to ask you a question.
That's good.
Be ready for that. And I, you know, that's my advice for a 10-year-old.
I think we can all take that advice. That's really good, Rob. People like to tell their own, they like to tell their story. We have to give them space to share their lives because maybe they don't have that.
Recently I heard the term be a spiritual resource person for the first time. People don't want a religious resource person. They want someone who's like in tune.
I really like that.
There's a lot of people in the younger generation, like just the movies they watch, there's so much demonic stuff. They have so many questions about the spiritual world, and so if we can show that, we have answers.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love it.
Achieve pure prayer, how do you achieve prayer of the heart, stuff like that. That's
That's great.
And then the Spirit will lead them to perfection of their self, you know, sanctification of their life. You know, whether that be a long process of continually casting off, changing, repenting, changing who you are as a person fundamentally, but that begins with a tangible, real relationship and understanding through humility, through contrition of the heart.
Wow, that's rich.
What I've seen as I like make deep friendships and get down to the nitty gritty, like spiritual things or whatever, you know, just progressing down the path of friendship and towards discipleship and towards Jesus, there's in my life and in other people's lives, I've seen more spiritual warfare that comes in different ways. Just, you know, whether it's spiritual warfare or just the flesh or the world or whatever, you know, there's a lot of resistance towards God. And so I found it helpful for myself and for others to pray Psalm 70 and different psalms. Specifically for when it says, God deliver me, you know, I say deliver their name or my name. And that's been, in times of like extreme circumstances for myself or for friends when they're pretty much at like a breaking point, you know, thankfully they've told me, but then I've prayed that Psalm 70 especially comes to mind, but there's other, a bunch of other psalms. And that, I found that to be a really effective tool to fight the resistance that there is. And that strengthens the friendship, and then it strengthens their relationship with God when I can tell them, you know, you were in this place, they knew where they were. I prayed Psalm 70, look at where you are now. Like, that's a real difference.
I love bringing scripture and praying through that. That's great. Oh, Jim, sorry.
I found that making friends means sacrifice. So to make the sacrifice a little more enjoyable, I like to include things like going to Boundary Waters or other things like that. Especially if you can do hard things, that you bond together better, makes it easier.
That's great. Finding what they enjoy, finding creative ways to spend time together.
Yeah, and if I enjoy it too, that's even better.
Oh, yeah. I started a golf ministry. No, I'm just kidding.
The last 29 years of my career, I was a CFO of an aerospace company here in Wichita. And we had a policy manual, and that policy manual said that you cannot proselytize or share your faith. So what I did is I chose to love and care for people. And that not just people in the top echelon of the company, but the actual guys on the floor producing those parts and just being kind and understanding. Well, probably close to maybe 10 years, and he came back from vacation one time. He came to my office, and he says, I was out to Arizona visiting a friend. And he had a near-death experience, really had a fear of God. I mean, fear of dying, I should say. And so he came into my office, and he said, I know there's something different about you. So, you know, we can't take time all the time to really focus on our faith in the workplace, but being an example of Jesus to the employees is really important.
I like that.
Because if they see something different about you, you know, they may come to you and inquire.
Well, Sid, I'm convinced that's probably better than proselytizing anyway. Anything else? We were told to go until it stopped raining, and I think it's about done.